Welcome back, everybody. We're talking with Brett Vinat from the School Sucks Project. The website is obviously schoolsucksproject.com. And we're having a really good conversation here about the issue of education and intelligence and, of course, in what direction school is taking people and kids specifically, and the long-term effects of this as adults grow up and suffer from these policies that have been enforced on them. A little bit here in the second, Brett, I wanted to try to get into a little bit more some of the positive things as well, or preventative things, what can be done basically to try to combat some of these issues. I wanted to begin on homeschooling, that issue, because as I brought up earlier, in some countries it's been banned, outlawed, whatever you want to call it. It's made illegal, basically. You're not allowed to do it anymore. And we've had a number of families from Sweden and Germany and other countries fleeing to other parts of the world to be able to, you know, continue to steer the direction of their own children in terms of their education, which is, of course, a horrible scenario. And that's a big, huge task in itself, of course, to overturn a whole legal system of governmental structures and whatnot. And we can ask you a little bit later if you have any suggestions about that. But let's say if we're talking about a country where it's perfectly fine, what's your view on homeschooling? And how do you have any suggestions on how to pull this off successfully? Let's say if we are in a situation where we don't have a, you know, can hire tutors or teachers at our disposal. Have you had any experience with homeschooling, Brett?
Yeah, absolutely. And I was working with a student. He was pulled out of one of the school districts here. He had some emotional issues that made it just really difficult for him to be around other children. And his parents actually hired me to work with him as a tutor. And this was probably 3 or 4 years ago. And what we found is that their world is full of teachers, you know, who are lining up for free to teach your children really online. YouTube is absolutely filled with teachers, right? But people still have this conception of what schooling is supposed to be, right? Homeschooling. So one of my standard answers when I get this question is stop saying schooling, you know? We've really tried to rebrand homeschooling as home education, right? Because one of the bigger missions of my show has been also to separate the concept of schooling from the concept of education.
Right. Yeah.
So I think that what's most important is that whatever instruction is being done is voluntary. I think that trying to learn against one's will, against the student's will, is pretty pointless. Basic, you know, from over a decade of experience in most places trying to do that. And you certainly get, you can get the illusion of success in forced schooling through short-term positive results and that are usually done in like some kind of standardized assessment. But like we already mentioned, there really isn't much in the way of retention or motivation or enthusiasm for learning, which really explains in many ways a lot of the troubling aspects or attributes rather of the adult population. So getting rid of the idea that you have to be doing school at home, right? Learning is living. Just being curious and being willing to embrace new experiences, that helps motivation and that maintains curiosity. And those are really the keys, I think. I mentioned this before, but emotional intelligence is super undervalued by the school experience. And if kids are given more control over their space and their time, I think there can be a really a lot of positive developments there. So, yeah, I mean, a short answer, I'm totally in favor of the concept of homeschooling, but it's really important for me to call it home education or authentic education and to drop the word schooling entirely.
That's a good very good point, actually. And yeah, we have this concept that has got to be very boxed in. I don't know what the conditions are, let's say, in America for homeschooling and who, you know, who comes into the picture and checks up on this, the students here and the parents who are doing this or the tutor and whatnot. I just personally know that any kind of different scenario of how kids are educated in Sweden, there you basically still have the same governmental curriculum, meaning even if you have a private school or if you have, you know, something that would look more like a charter school or what have you, or if it's state school, it all unfortunately has to kind of abide by the same principles and the same things have to be taught, basically. So that is just kind of a an illusion of so-called diversity, that you have some kind of choice. Is that better in America? Is there? Can you go in what direction you want, or do you have to adhere to certain points along the way, Brett?
Well, it varies from state to state. Most of these laws are done at a state level. I think that there isn't that much federal regulation of homeschooling, not to say that there won't be someday. The way things usually work here is that the people have this idea that the schools are funded at the local level, which by and large is true. Most of the schools are funded through property tax in the same town or district where the school is. Schools in their districts, they want money from state departments of education, right? So they're willing to kind of jump through whatever hoops the state department wants to, whatever thing they want to implement, right, on the local level, they'll do. But the state departments of education are taking directives now, and this has really expanded considerably over the last 50 years or so, from the federal department of education, which has really only existed for maybe 40 years. But obviously, there were efforts prior to the establishment of the federal department of education to centralize control over schooling. Even though a lot of it is feels very local, there's people who have always wanted, all the way back to Horace Mann, right? When they first brought the system here and started implementing it, the Prussian system, they wanted things to be centralized. So it's easier to answer questions about the United States on a whole today, but that's a bad thing. You know, it would be nice to say, oh, it varies tremendously, and there's some places where it's really great. I know in New Hampshire, where I worked with this student, people left me alone. Nobody had any questions. I would submit pretty informal reports now and then. We were pretty much able to do whatever we wanted. His parents really believed in this unschooling philosophy. So he was eight. He was really into ancient aliens. That was his big thing. And cryptids, you know, like the Bigfoot. One day we spent an entire day building a trap for Bigfoot. You know, there, like, you how would we catch Bigfoot? And, you know, he learned a lot about like GPS. We would do map making. We did video production. He got into magic. And this was a young boy who was so fearful of any new experience just from the 2 years that he had spent in school, and the frustration and turmoil that was really forced upon him by the work that was forced on him. So there was a transitional period where he got comfortable with me and comfortable with what we were doing. But then the results were really, really positive, and it was really, really led by him. I kind of felt like I was his assistant, you know, and that was great for intrinsic motivation. That was great for his self-confidence. He loved to tell people stories about UFOs. And it was a really amazing experience. But, you know, the biggest part of it was teachers and tutors are everywhere. Right now, I was there and I was being paid, but we were outsourcing a lot to YouTube. You know, if there was something that we wanted to learn, magic or video production, we would go and we would watch a YouTube video where people, like I said, are lining up to teach.
Yeah.
Now, when it comes to instruction, though, I really would recommend a piece by Dorothy Sayers called The Lost Tools of Learning. Are you familiar with that?
Yeah, I've heard the title, but I'm not too familiar with the contents of it.
All right. So I would suggest people read this. It's not too long, and they should read it carefully and critically and remember that it was written in the 1940s and could probably use a few updates in some respects. But it's essentially about how to teach children the trivium, right? So it starts out, and it's a series of have you noticed questions, right? Like, she asks all these things. Have you noticed this about, you know, the ills of society and the problems with our schools? And I actually pulled this quote from it. She says, "Is not the great defect of our education today a defect traceable through all the disquieting symptoms of trouble that I have mentioned, that although we often succeed in teaching our pupils subjects, we fail lamentably on the whole in teaching them how to think? They learn everything except the art of learning."
Yeah.
So she is very clear about the fact that she's not a child psychologist, but she does seem to understand the developmental stages fairly well, or at least what the understanding was of the developmental stages for children at that time, and kind of lines that up with the three parts of the trivium, the grammar, logic, and rhetoric. And she suggests that early on in the development that you're not giving them the whole package all at once, right? So some instruction might be necessary. And I think if people learn how to learn, the rest takes care of itself somewhat easily. And that's certainly what she suggests. And she says, you know, it's not, don't be alarmed if, you know, your learner who's learning this way, learning the trivium method, which, you know, is essentially the lost tool of learning or the lost tools of learning, they might not be, you know, perfectly on par with their public school counterparts, but that's not a bad thing because they'll be ahead in the end.
Right.
Right.
Yeah.
And school is just working like a checklist of, like she says, subjects that you're never really learning how to learn. So I recommend taking a look at the lost tools of learning. Take what you like, leave what you don't. Apply it to modern times. There might be some improvements that you can make. It's obviously variable from student to student a little bit, but it's a good guideline for wanting parents who want to create an environment where the trivium could be introduced. So that's something I would add on to this world that's already filled with teachers.
Well, that would be a good kind of approach too, if we take into consideration what you, I guess we could call it kind of open source knowledge, right? We have a lot of things out there on the web now that is for free, and it doesn't mean you would run into some potential, you know, problems and errors and things that are, you know, flat out, you know, incorrect, of course. But if it's practical things of application of learning things, you know, as you said, as even learning how to edit videos or whatever, it's something that is out there and accessible now for free, basically, where some people have paid a lot of money to go to, you know, fancy schools to do this in the right way in the past. So things are kind of changing on that level as well. And I think you're right when you say that our attitude towards, you know, where you can get knowledge from needs to change with that as well. I mean, I've learned tremendous amounts of, you know, things that I do today with the website and all that on my own. I did a little bit of a media course for a couple of years, then I dropped out because I didn't get anything from it. But nonetheless, it was, so I had a little bit, a tiny base maybe there, but the majority of, you know, what I do today, I've just learned on my own and how to do things. So it's easy, I think, if one just kind of shatters those. It's a kind of a, both a self-esteem thing, but also just, you know, you have to learn to make those mistakes and learn to just kind of proceed forward. And I think it's really an attitude at the root of it more than anything. What'd you say to that, Brett?
Yeah, absolutely. Again, I think that as far as all of these teachers, some of them are going to be wrong about some things, right? And that's where critical thinking and intellectual self-defense really helps. But that would be a part of the whole home education experience. One thing that has entirely disappeared from school, pretty much in most places, is play. You know, and this is very important because it is a self-directed learning experience, you know, and I was talking to somebody else who was interested in homeschooling recently, and I asked, you know, when you're six, what opportunities do you have for feeling like, you know, you're in control of your own life? And school has been asking for more and more of people's lives as it has expanded over the course of the last as far back as it was brought in, it's been expanding. And as people have been asked to give up more and more of their time and volition, we've seen a lot of like negative trends, you know, lower academic performance, the increased diagnosis of these labels like ADHD and depression. And the only answer that any of the professionals have been able to give is like, well, they probably need more school. You know, they probably need more intervention from us. And I think that, you know, the real answer is they just need less. They really need no intervention from this top-down system that requires young people to make all of these sacrifices. And that's how they'll get some control over their own lives, and they'll build that confidence. They'll build that self-awareness, self-esteem, self-regulation. They'll understand the benefits of motivation, and they'll become confident, which will lead to better interactions with other people as well. So I have no hope for the system as it exists with respect to reform or anything like that.
Mm-hmm.
I think really all of the answers lie in embracing and investigating and having debates about what is the best way to do things in the realm of home education.
So what's your view on kind of fixing this on the side of things with consideration that people are forced to pay for the type of school through the property taxes in America and through all the types of taxes in Europe, of course. But is there any hope in trying to move this system towards better education? Because, I mean, what's your view on that? Is this something we need to fight on the side as we're trying to, you know, take control of education? Because obviously we're funding this, right? And otherwise we end up paying for things twice, and it's actually doing a lot of damage in the process. So fighting the political system, what's your view there?
Don't do it. You know, I hate to say it. I wish there was a way. But, you know, part of your question was, what can people do in places where homeschool is illegal? And I started thinking about it. And what I came up with was like a lot of the same advice that I would be giving people here in the U.S. about Common Core, right? So it's changing our conception from that John Dewey, like education as a public good, you know, the individual under the needs of society, and forget all of the collectivism of it and just try to, you know, save yourself and save the people that you'd care about. Like, there's not much people can do about Common Core right now. There's not much people can do in Sweden or Germany about the fact that taking charge of, you know, their child's education is illegal. But there are ways to deal with that, you know. I would say, first of all, people need to be engaged. And they need to encourage others to do the same. And they should ask other parents things like, especially with Common Core, did you see this? What do you think of this? You know, and they should start a dialogue about it. I think there certainly is this move for the state to be taking over more and more of the child rearing from the parents, right? And they try to counter this by saying, when people don't like how the school is encroaching into the family life, they're told they have a voice, you know, just like with voting. You can join the PTA, you can join the school board. But we see things like, I don't know if you've ever seen videos of this, but like parents being taken out of school board meetings by police for questioning Common Core.
Hmm.
Yeah, this happened in Maryland, I think last year.
Hmm.
So, it really is, what I find is it's a way to feel small and frustrated, right? Trying to take on these systems as a whole. But this is the path that people are always told to follow, right? Get on the treadmill of political action, right? Get on the treadmill of electing the right candidate, you know, or changing a law, right? And they don't go anywhere. And they're just these high burnout operations that lead to people giving up. Because I think so often when people identify a problem in their own family or some of the negative effects of schooling on their own child, they think they have to fix everything, you know, and not just develop their own defenses for dealing with it. Now, I know not everyone can get their kids out of the public school system, but, you know, they can... In addition to talking about this with other parents, they can talk about it with their children. You know, if people are bringing home like Common Core worksheets, parents should be looking at that stuff and maybe trying to counter that. And I would say that in any country where there's no escape for government education, you know, like you have to teach them at home to a certain respect, to a large respect, depending on, you know, what type of indoctrination is going on in that system. So I know that sometimes there is no escape, but there's always ways to mitigate that, I think.
Yeah, I've gone back and forth on this quite a bit in terms of like not engaging with it at all, just doing everything on the side. I guess to more and more having a view that from trying to prevent it completely running amok, there has to be at least a certain portion of the energy that we, you know, to get things done in this world has to be directed towards developing a will to change these kinds of systems and the courage, you know, politically to speak up against it too. Because on some part, I guess it has to do with the kind of sacrifices that this lady did, or whoever there was hauled off by the police for speaking up about these things. I think more of those kinds of things that occur, the more eyebrows will be raised by people. And to a certain extent, I think that that's what we need. Unfortunately, as much of an individualist as I am, I do think it's a numbers game at the end of it. If people are aware of these things, if a majority of people are speaking up against it, I think it'll be more likely to be able to stop these things from completely just, ruining people's lives, because that's kind of where we're at, right? I mean, if we don't, where do you think this will go if the system as it exists is just allowed to continue to steamroll over people in this way? It can't end good, right?
No, that's a really good point. And I think that I was answering the question more in terms of practical actions that are empowering versus long-term strategies. But you're absolutely right about the attrition of that, right? And I'm all in favor of speaking out. It's pretty much, I shifted my career from talking to, 10 young people a week to talking to thousands, right? Because I realized I had a lot of good things to say. And my last profession, I just really wasn't leveraging all of the things I had to say, all of the information that I wanted to provide people. I wasn't leveraging it very well. So this is, better for me. I feel so much better since I started doing this full time. And yeah, absolutely. I think that those people who do want to take a stand and are documenting that stand, that's really important. And raising awareness about what their objections are, which this gentleman in Maryland, the guy that got hauled out of the Common Core meeting, people can watch the video. His name was Robert Small. Yeah. Robert Small, Common Core, Google or Startpage should get you to the video. He states his objections while he's being taken out, right? Because he knows I don't think he went there to be an activist, and he says as much. He says, I'm not an activist, I'm a concerned parent. But I think it occurred to him that, oh, this is being documented, I should say what the problem is. And I think that's really effective. So yeah, turning up the volume on the conversation is very important, but I really feel like, at least in the United States, the federal government anyway, is going to collapse.
Right.
Right. And there goes a lot of control, a lot of the centralized control over the schools. Now, if the federal government in the United States collapse, all 50 states are pretty reliant on federal government welfare, some more than others. Some would be third world hellholes if it wasn't for federal government welfare. But it's kind of going to collapse on itself from there. And I don't know how long that's going to take. I don't have any predictions, whether it's 5 years away or 10 years away. But I would think that the schooling system would be there until the end, because it is a golden egg laying goose, of obedient people who will conform to, whatever the expectations are, whatever the norms that come down from the top are. So the school is obviously very, very valuable to the state. In many ways, it maintains the state.
Yeah.
I think people have understood that idea for a long time. So I think it will be there until the end. And I really don't like, and I've gotten some criticism for saying that before, that save yourself kind of mentality. That's not popular with everybody in my audience. I do understand that the more people that can speak out, the better. And I really hope that, what I do is a way of projecting this message, that because of the way we market the show, the whole school sucks thing, that resonates with young people. But following that, which we should all agree that school sucks, there's also a political philosophy that's a part of. And the better you understand that, the better arguments you can make in favor of your own freedom, regardless of your age, but I think especially for young people. So yeah, I'm all for speaking out. I think the more people that can do it, the better. The more creative ways we have of doing it, the better. But at the same time, I want to make sure that people aren't waiting patiently for some kind of revolution in American schooling, because that's not coming. And your children, in many cases, or people's children, day after day, are being marched into these schools. And, there's practical self-defense and family defense strategies that should be investigated in the meantime.
Very good. Now, you've kind of addressed this a little bit, but I want to extend the question a little bit further, where you believe this will end up if we do not take control of education. I mean, in the long term, I mean, we're suffering from this particularly in the West, but this is really a system that's going in globally. This is what they're pushing to put in everywhere. But where will we end up, mankind, if we don't take charge of this? Do you see any light at the end of that tunnel, or it's kind of gloomy, isn't it?
I think so. And this system, it's run its course in different places at different speeds with different results for different reasons. None of the outcomes were super desirable from my point of view. One of the best examples, the go-to example on my show, is Germany. You know, I mean, the system started in Central Europe. I would say they were able to reap what they sowed a few generations later, or maybe four or five generations later, in the 1930s and the 1940s, in pretty much the same location. You know, people were taught to be obedient. People were taught to be good soldiers. People were taught not to question authority. They were taught that individuality or individualism was not as important as the allegiance to the state. Those were the lessons of compulsory schooling in Central Europe. And right there, the results were the Third Reich, you know? So that's one of the outcomes of the system. I mean, we see softer versions of that, less tragic versions of that, maybe what's going on in Sweden today, and in the United States today. So, and the other thing too is that the only solution seems to be expansion. You know, I mean, that's all that they can muster as an answer to this downward spiral of society. And it's like, it's self-fulfilling, right? Children are dumb and bad, so they need more of us. But trapped children will easily and often develop this myriad of undesirable and antisocial, qualities. But what's the best way to say this? I think that then people look at the output of the system and they say, you know, they must be getting it from home. The parents have the same problem, right? Like, it's very challenging to look inward, especially if you're some kind of support group like a teachers union or in the bubble of academia, to say, oh, well, wait, maybe the problem is, you know, the continuous childification of the country, right? But it just seems to get worse all the time until we get to the situation that you're describing in Sweden, or a lot of us are observing in the United States in many ways, mm-hmm. maybe not to the same extent.
Yeah, it's very worrying. Now, what's your view on, let's say, positive role models, things like this? I had a little question about this for you as well, considering that pop culture is, pushed upon children and teenagers. It's very much, I see it as very much in anti-intellectualism, etc. It's the type of entertainment media that comes out of Hollywood. It pushes a lot of destructive behavior on children as well. And it's very difficult to isolate the kids from this type of environment. A lot of kids want to see that. They go to that. But do you have any suggestions in terms of how to kind of take back control of the culture and begin to insert some positive role models into that particular picture, specifically then targeting, towards children and teenagers so they can get some positive things back in their life, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Let me ask you this. Like, what, when you look at mainstream media or Hollywood or the things that young people are asked to embrace and look at as attractive, what do you find to be the most troubling?
It's the overall environment, I think, of it's kind of anti-intellectualism. It's all about the social status. It's, I see promiscuity being pushed and, everything that is basically, well, I see it as corrosive, ultimately. It's things that have kids ending up in situation of control when it comes very much about what everyone else thinks about them, and it's very much about, kind of fitting in. At the same time, it's kind of a degeneracy within that to a certain extent. It's anything that is, let's say, traditional is going out the window for the sake of just, pushing the boundaries all the time. It's kind of, to a certain extent, revolutionary, if you will. And I just see that as really destructive on children that needs, positive, male and female role models in their life to begin to emulate, And I when I look around, I don't see that anywhere in the popular media,
Yeah, it's kind of like, it's like you're a hard shell seeking approval, right? With really nothing inside. You're just your exterior. Is that part of it?
Exactly. It's very much about you being too cool to bother about being bothered about anything. And you're exactly your hardened exterior, but yet at the same time, which is the kind of bizarre situation about this, it's all about being liked by everyone else and fitting in as much as possible, or being the popular one, you know?
Yeah, I would like to see, like, I don't like, you know, maybe the conservative language of parents need to take more control. You know, I don't like that way of thinking about kids. And I know that's not what you're saying, but those are the best models that young people are going to have. And I think that from my own observations anyway, we're seeing a kind of an increasing disengagement from parents. You know, I think it was a big change in my life is I remember when my mom had to go to work, right? Like, it wasn't the economy of the 80s anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And she had to get a job. And then I became a latchkey kid. And, you know, being young and having two parents that are gone, and you get home from school and you need to decompress, and, you know, you start looking for trouble. It was right around the time I was in heaven. I was like 13, right? My mom got a job, so she was gone till like 6. My dad was gone all the time. And we had just gotten cable, right? MTV. And I would just come home from school. I would watch Yo MTV Raps. They had this show called The Grind, where these girls in bikinis would dance on the beach. And, you know, I was like a middle schooler. And I was like, Does it get any better than this? You know? And that was my window into the world, you know? So that was unfortunate. And I think that having a lot of that is, I think, people wanting to kind of raise their status economically. You know, I don't think all mothers needed to go to work. Obviously, there were other political pressures that encouraged women to go to work in the United States, you know, like feminism, like and I don't care who stays home, whether it's the father or the mother. It doesn't matter to me at all. But it's nice that, especially when somebody is young and they're being schooled, that they would have that kind of positive, loving influence from one parent or the other.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
But many kids today don't. What we've seen really with the emergence of, you know, the technology that's so accessible for young people today through iPods or iPads or the internet, and still even, you know, the expanding world of television, is a lot of parents are like, great, there you go. Look at how quiet they are in front of that thing.
Yeah.
You know, and disengaging even further because of that. I did a series recently on a Nathaniel Brandon book called The Six Pillars of Self-Esteem. And it was a series for adults as much as it would be for teenagers. What are the attributes of a mentally healthy person? You know, the ability to live consciously, the ability to accept oneself, to take responsibility, to be assertive, to live with purpose and to live with integrity. You know, those are things that I would want to see modeled, you know, and there might be some parents who are good at a few of those things or all of those things, but they're living in this world where they like, it's annoying to have parents model those things for young people.
Yeah.
You know, because those relationships are so distant. And school really, really pulls people apart, because our families apart, you know, parents and children apart, because parents often, because they're busy with their own lives, and gosh, they really, really just want to believe that school is about education and that their children are in good hands when they disappear for 35 hours a week. You know, so they want to believe that that's a positive experience. They people get very, very upset when I try to tell them otherwise, you know?
Yeah.
But because of that, they also are often put in these adversarial relationships with their children, because they have to be enforcers for the school. You know, did you do your homework? It's 6 o'clock in the morning, you know, even though your circadian rhythms want you to wake up at 9, get out of bed. You know, that is how a day starts for many parents and children 180 days a year.
Yeah. That's right.
You know, and that's strains relationships. So, you know, it's really unfortunate that parents have to be enforcers for the school in that way. So I think it's hard, because it's that self-fulfilling thing. One generation of schooled people makes the next. So maybe there aren't a lot of parents practicing, you know, these six pillars of self-esteem or exercising their critical thinking skills or showing high levels of emotional intelligence. And I think that the people who are concerned about this are probably already making a conscious effort to do these things, to be engaged, to have positive, loving relationships, non-adversarial, win-win, you know, avoiding that kind of domination set up with their kids. So they don't need this information, you know, and that's kind of the trick, right? Like the people who do need it, most of them would not listen to this. So that's why I think another part of modeling is, you know, from adult to adult, you know, but that's harder today too, because communities are so disconnected. People don't know their neighbors. They don't interact with their neighbors. They don't trust anything beyond the end of their driveway, right? And that also affects, you know, how they treat their kids, the amount of faith that they put in their kids, the amount of responsibility that they put in their kids. So I don't see a lot, and I really, like, as I've answered this question, I've tried to, like, have in the back of my head some conception of positive role models that are available through the media, but I'm not coming up with much. And that's pretty disturbing, isn't it?
Yeah, it is.
You know, I saw the video that you guys did about Will Ferrell and that whole culture, and that's what's cool. You know?
Oh, yeah, definitely. Yeah.
So I would love to see more parents, like, asking, being, feeling comfortable, certainly not, you know, preventing young people from watching anything like that. Like, oh yeah, go watch Funny or Die, go see Anchorman 2, but then talking about it, you know, like, how was it? What did you learn?
Yeah.
that kind of thing, I think would be really valuable. And I would say that I, you know, I mean, at times didn't have the best relationships with my parents, but my father certainly was always expressed an interest in what I had to say and wasn't, like, judgmental about it. Well, oh, let me tell you how it really is. I remember being, like, really little and him, like, trying to explain certain aspects of, like, politics and Ronald Reagan to me that today I just don't regard those explanations as very good. But I would say that he did a good job expressing an interest in what I had to say and, you know, a curiosity in what I thought. And I would say that I benefited from that. I didn't get too much of it in school. I wouldn't say I got none of it in school, but, you know, I feel like maybe I had better models than some, you know. Certainly if I had children, I would set out to do better than they did, as we all should from generation to generation. But yeah, it's a troubling question, Henrik. There are not a lot of positive role models in the entertainment media.
I know, and it's what I feel there is that it's shaping the environment. It's really the framework where a lot of young minds are looking now, because, as we know, you know, we're kind of hardwired, we're designed that way to observe our surroundings and learn from it and try to fit into that. It's just kind of a survival mechanism. It's understandable, right? But when we have adults that are themselves kind of disconnected from everything, they have never really examined their own, you know, cultural roots, the philosophical discourse about life. There's not much there. It's kind of a shallowness all over to go around. So when the kids are first of all not encouraged even to think about those things, perhaps, or even, you know, be in that type of environment, they go to television and media and movies and everything else, music. Shouldn't forget that. That's a huge part of it too. And then they get, you know, educated in that. They get that's how you should be. That's how you should behave and everything else. And I know it's obviously all kids don't develop like that. There's plenty of people who wake up. They, you know, they see through that as they grow up, etc. But nonetheless, I think it creates a lot of work that you need to do for years and years to take yourself out of that and to kind of, you know, reset yourself from all the crap that you've been, you know, dragged through, basically. But my point here being, to me, it's amazing that there isn't more concerted effort by adults either getting together and organizing or even doing it on their own. And maybe there are more people doing it on their own that I know, but of really trying to take back that influence for young people. I know that, you know, the Christian community is doing that, right? They don't allow they're young to look at some of the pop culture stuff. And I definitely understand that, you know, although that to a certain degree then also creates a kind of an isolation, if you will. But there has to be something there, has to be a will there of taking control of where you know, our children's life is developing, don't you think, Brett?
I see. I don't think that there's anything, and I know this is not exactly what you're saying, but I don't think there's anything inherently dangerous about pop culture or, you know, Fox News, right? And there's always this movement on the left, right? We need to protect everyone from the people who are trying to hurt them and corrupt them. And I think there's a lot of that on the right too, right? There's a lot of that in political action generally, right? But parents, I think, see television as just something separate, right? That no, and I've tried to go over this with people, like the agenda behind the entertainment media, you know, and the hidden messages that are just in these films, in these television shows, the agendas that they push. And people think that's all just crazy talk, right? So that's just the boob tube television. But rest assured, my child is okay because they're getting an education. They don't realize that it's a counterfeit education, that they're not learning critical thinking skills. If I had a child right now who was 14, I know that if I was suddenly in this situation, for the emotions might come in and I would feel totally different. Differently. I know that's possible.
Mm-hmm.
But I would say that as long as they had a kind of intellectual and emotional self-defense, I wouldn't feel the need to shield them from anything.
I agree.
I would like them to watch Funny or Die and say, isn't it hilarious what a socialist Will Ferrell is and how he thinks that I'm an idiot that would just, you know, eat this up because he's Will Ferrell. Ha ha.
Yeah.
How silly.
No, I agree. Exactly. No, that's actually my point there. We have to develop that. But I guess what I'm saying on top of it, it's not about just saying, no, don't watch the TV and isolate people from that. I guess it's just about, we have an awful lot of bad shit out there, excuse the lingo, but linguistics. But nonetheless, how about pulling together and trying to offer something which is, that kind of stands against that? That's kind of my point, more or less. It's of another, there has to be will and desire there to create something which has, you know, offer something different than what we have in the entertainment media. And I'm surprised we haven't seen more of this, more of that. That's my point.
Right. Absolutely. Yeah. And it's a great time, right? Because it's getting easier and easier to do that, which is, you know, sometimes I think about all of these realizations that I've had in the last, I don't know what, 5, 7, 8 years, right? Since I really started to embrace the ideas of liberty and form a consistent message, really organize what I wanted to say about schooling versus education. Imagine if that was me instead of 2006. Imagine if that was me in 1986. I'd be screwed. You know, there'd be nowhere to go.
Right.
I could start a newsletter with a typewriter, and put them in people's mailboxes.
Right. Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
So we are now at a point, and really, from my experience, the time is now. And I just have this amazing feeling of gratitude that I realized all this stuff. That I embraced this philosophy, that I organized my thoughts at a time where I could do something about it, where I could share it with somebody. And that's possible now. So anybody who wants to do that is only a couple steps away from being able to do that. We have 11-year-old kids who have more YouTube subscribers than MSNBC.
Yeah.
That's great, right? That's great, right? Because they're the gatekeepers, and they're becoming increasingly irrelevant. And I think people know it. So it would probably just have to look different, right? There's probably not going to be, in any way that I can see, and I don't mean to be a cynic, I just can't see how this would work, any real significant penetration of the mainstream media.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It is what it is. It does what it's supposed to do. But now we have all of these workarounds for that. And I'd certainly like to be bigger. You know, last time I checked, my YouTube channel did have more subscribers than the official MSNBC channel. And it's not that many. But
yeah.
There are people who have huge audiences, you know, who are getting this message out there. And I mean, think about what it means to reach 100,000 people. And what did they turn around and do with it?
Mm-hmm.
I remember Harry Brown was a libertarian candidate for president about a decade ago. And he said, never be afraid to talk about this stuff. Never be afraid to embarrass yourself. He didn't say this. I'm adding this. Don't be afraid to embarrass yourself, you know, getting up there and talking about, you know, the ideas of liberty or your thoughts on education or your criticisms of society, because you never know who's going to hear you and then what they're going to do with that information. You know,
yeah.
I have a friend here in New Hampshire. He moved here for the Free State Project. He was a fan of my show. He lived in Texas and he loved School Sucks. And he used to work for Child Protective Services.
Oh,
you know, as he was after he became a libertarian, because he was holding out as like that was the last hope. Right. Like we have to at least they'll protect the children. Right. At least they'll protect the children. And he quit that job and he started his own show and he just published, as far as I know, like the first comprehensive book on the history and mission of Child Protective Services.
Oh, really? Interesting.
Yeah.
What was his name again?
His name's Carlos Morales. And the title of the book is Legally Kidnapped, The Case Against Child Protective Services.
Oh, great.
Now, Carlos does not owe me all of his his success by any stretch of the imagination. You know, he's smart, he's driven, all that. But to see like somebody who said, oh, you know, I might have been motivated by the fact that, you know, I heard your show and I really liked it. And then we live in a world where like I was accessible to him, right? Just like, you know, the hosts of Free Talk Live or Stefan Molyneux at one point were accessible to me, you know, and they helped boost me. In some ways. And I hope, you know, I can do that for other people who are motivated or inspired by anything that I've done. So I think that there's this great, you know, multiplying effect. If I can get this stuff out to 100,000 people, what can they do? You know, and even if, you know, 95,000 of them do nothing, you know, what do the other 5,000 do? What do 10 of them do?
It's still better than nothing. It's still something, you know, and exactly. And they go on and they do things. And exactly. I mean, your point is well taken. The old media, the structure of that is definitely dying. It's happening. Things are transforming on that level. And what I'm talking about is, you know, in terms of trying to influence things in a good direction, that's obviously already happening, you know, and I think it's just more of a kind of a push of a recognition that's right. That's what we need to do. It's kind of a way of, reassessing the objectives. Okay, what do we need to do here? What's going on? And I think there are a lot of people out there who are like, wait a minute, what can I do? What's going on? Where can I put my focus and attention to trying to improve things? And it's more, the encouragement there that there are tons of things you can do to get involved in, down to, you know, even, as I said, even making entertainment that have, you know, positive things in mind that are, you know, maybe not cheesy, but they're still, you know, and you can become, as you said, a YouTube success, if you will, overnight practically these days. And the way to produce media is getting cheaper and cheaper all the time, and even effects wise. And there's tremendous things you can do these days. So I'm on that note, very positive about where things is going. And I think if we can get more even concerted efforts towards actively trying to break down the power that the old media is holding, then I'm all for it, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. I'm really excited to see like where this goes next. Like it really feels like everything is moving in the right direction, you know? And obviously like the podcast market, you know this as well as I do, has become super crowded.
Sure. You know? Saturated, yeah.
But I'm finding like more and more shows that are delivering similar messages in ways that like I'm excited about. That aren't boring, you know, like I think being able to be entertaining is really important. Like that's how you get people to listen to you. And George Carlin said once, the point of laughter is the best place to insert a new idea.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you get people on your side a little bit, you warm up to them. I always say, and I didn't mean to get down on certain types of action, you know, but I always have thought that like politics is the worst place to introduce new ideas to people.
Oh,
because people go there
course.
To be angry and hostile.
Well, that's just it. You know? That's my point. I mean, nothing, politics is a reflection. Well, I mean, not really, because we know it's hijacked, but nonetheless, this is how it used to be. It used to be a reflection of, you know, the desires that people have, what they want to have achieved. I mean, what I'm talking about in terms of entertainment media is that's the people who are controlling your dreams and your aspirations of what you want to become and who you are. And that's why it's so tremendously important and also so tremendously dangerous in terms of who are you allowing to give you these inputs? You know what I mean? And what's their agenda? You know?
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. I totally agree with that.
So what do you think about if we touch upon some of the other things here a little bit before we begin to round up here, but what's your view on dropping out of school then? There's plenty of successful people that have dropped out of school versus those who end up in lifelong debt, basically, to get an education that, unfortunately, in these times, won't even maybe get you anywhere. And I guess this would be true in America especially, but it's, you know, again, it's pretty much the same deal around in the Western world now. But is it a good idea to drop out as soon as possible? What would you recommend?
I think the answer would be different for everybody. You know, it depends on where they are, what they want, how old they are, what their family situation is like. My general advice for people, and this wasn't certainly not advice that I could give when I was working as a college consultant, but, you know, understand the reasons why you'd want to drop out. Have a plan that you could present to parents who might be hostile to the idea, you know, like, would you continue your school online to get like some kind of equivalency diploma? That's in the United States, the GED, which I think is just general equivalency diploma. Could you sell them in on the idea of home education? People should know the law where they live, and they should have an open dialogue with their parents about it. And I think that once you've gathered up all of that grammar of this, you know, the situation, and you're also, you know, trying to be considerate of how other people might feel about it, you know, people who care about you, like parents, then you have a presentation to make. Now, I can't imagine that there's much of an argument for finishing high school in the United States beyond the fact that it is a doorway into getting into college. Right. Mm-hmm. Like, what arguments are other people really making
right
at this point? You know, I mean, the only argument left about public school is, you know, why is it failing? Right. So even college doesn't really seem like a wise investment of time or money these days. And I think that after high school, the question should be, if people finish high school, do I want to be an employee or do I want to be my own boss? And the schooling experience hasn't prepared many people to even consider the latter. So we have people just kind of being herded into college now as if it's the 13th grade. And, you know, the big push from, you know, President Obama and a lot of people on the left is college for everybody, right? That might be the case in Sweden, right?
Oh, certainly. Of course.
Yeah. Okay. So I don't see how, if everybody goes to college, a bachelor's degree or a bachelor of arts is worth more than a high school diploma. If everybody has that.
Well, it isn't. Right? Now, that's just it. Yeah. It doesn't set you apart in any way. And just a side note on that, I think Swedes actually go to school more and longer, I should say, than any other country. So we're stuck there for a long time, by the way.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. So from my experience, like I said, I worked briefly as a tutor and a college consultant. Young people have no exposure to any alternative view of what is after high school. You know, and yeah. I really thought it was important on my show, even if it drew criticism, to open up that dialogue. Now, I couldn't do this when I was, you know, working that job as a college consultant, because these were highly competitive school districts, a lot of keeping up with the Joneses. I would have been shown to the door, you know, and then fired from my job for suggesting that, well, maybe you should think about whether or not you want to go to college or need to go to college. That option was certainly not on the table. Mm-hmm. So on my show, I think I'm able to offer, you know, a full picture as far as advice is concerned. When I was in graduate school in, I think my, gosh, what was that? 17th year of formal schooling, I was realizing that it had become very easy to educate myself. And that was a really amazing experience, you know? And I think that as an alternative to college, that was something that I wanted people to think about. You know, I just had Canadian expatriate on my show named Jeff Berwick, and he's really like telling people to get out of the United States, you know, and look for options elsewhere and consider things like entrepreneurship. But again, this is one of those the time is now situations. If I was making that transition in the 1980s, I wouldn't have stumbled across the information. I wouldn't have connected with the same people. It would have been virtually impossible to do that. So I feel very lucky those options presented themselves to me. Now, I think another thing that I would like to see people think about more is entrepreneurship, right?
Yeah.
And there's this chorus, again, mostly from the left, that says, stop telling people that they can be self-directed and financially independent. You know, right. Stop telling people that they're going to be rich. You know, it's a ruse. So that might not be for everyone. You know, maybe not everyone has, you know, it's not, I don't want to call it courage, but it's difficult. You know, it can be really frustrating and it can be really scary to have that much control over your own financial future. Mm. And it's okay that not everyone wants to do that. And they might need to look at more training options, either for, you know, community college, right? Which I would say that's a good place to start, you know, instead of like resigning yourself to a four-year school right out of high school, like maybe trying a semester or two at community college, feel it out. Trade schools, you know, where you can walk away with more skills in less time and usually at a lower cost. So I would want people to know that they have options, right? And maybe it's challenging in the U.S. today to be an entrepreneur, but like I said before, there's opportunities all over the world. You know, I'm actually starting to investigate the possibility of moving to Mexico because it just might be better for my lifestyle to be there, you know, and for somebody else, maybe it's Thailand or maybe it's Cambodia, you know, who knows? We're taught to think here anyway, that the world is a very scary place and we're damn lucky to be, you know, inside these protective shores and borders. Mm. But I think just instead of corralling people into college, which is why most of them are finishing high school, the picture needs to broaden. And I think that another thing that obviously people are not being told by college consultants is that if you want to go to college, a lot of colleges like stories, you know, like, oh, I dropped out of high school. I talked to one kid a couple months ago. He wanted to drop out of high school so he could be a yak herder.
That's right. I saw that show on the website. I didn't listen to it yet, but that sounded really interesting. Yeah.
Yeah. Now, Harvard University would love that story. You know, they like people. If you want to go to Harvard University, I don't recommend it. Might open some doors for you for sure. But a lot of admissions departments, especially in smaller schools, will be able to take a closer look at applicants, right? If you're applying to, you know, the University of Arizona, where they're fielding tens of thousands of applicants for each new class, they're looking at your SAT scores, you know, and maybe your GPA, and you're not much more than that. But if you have more of a story, or if you, you know, have more specific individual needs or goals, I mean, smaller schools might be better if you want to go to college. It's not to say that all college is worthless. It's just the attitude that most Americans bring to it make it worthless because it's just like an extension of high school. And, you know, I felt like I didn't want to go to college. I think I kind of found a purpose while I was there. I did continue on to graduate school, but I stopped because I just decided it was silly. Like I looked at the options that were available to me in the real world. If I just made more of my time available, like I could be employed full time running a campus at a private school, or I could be going to school half time and working half time and be a teacher's aide, you know? So that was the path I went, and I wound up dropping out of graduate school, but obviously it's different for everybody. So should people drop out? It's up to the individual, but I hope I went through, you know, some of the considerations that I would suggest before making a decision like that.
Certainly. Very well. Well, Brett, it's been great having you on the program. Thank you for your time today. Please let us know if there's anything additional here you'd like to, I guess, leave us with, or any other suggestions or tips to our audience, be they, you know, worried parents about their children, or be they students who are sick and tired of, you know, being in school.
Well, I think a big one is to really, and to spread this idea to stop thinking about schooling as a collective effort and really start thinking about it more as an individual pursuit. And on the personal level, that means, you know, something that is self-directed, like I said, that obviously is going to build emotional intelligence, critical thinking skills. That the same is true for the family, right? Like it's something that happens on a family level, on a local level. The idea of political reform is, in my estimation, a huge frustration, a way to feel very small and not efficacious at all. But I do want to second what you said about trying to project warnings and information about what schooling is and what the agenda is behind schooling, and what are the results in places where we can already see them, where systems like this have run their course. So my website is filled with resources. The show is pretty diverse. We've been doing it for 5 years. We've covered a lot of stuff. And if people are interested in anything specific, they can just go and there's a series drop-down menu. You can see all the topics that we've covered in depth. And it's schoolsucksproject.com.
All right, great. Well, thank you so much again for coming on. Keep up the good work. Schoolsucksproject.com is the website. We'll have that linked up as well. All right, great to have you, Brett. Thanks again.
Thank you, Henrik. I really appreciate it.
All right, folks, good to have you with us today. An important addition to the conversation about taking back control from the elites is the question of education and raising intelligent children that can see through most of what our parents, their parents, and ourselves have fallen for. So we hope you enjoyed it and learned something new. Thank you for listening, and thank you for being a member. We'll be back in just a few days. Until then, we say take care, stay well, and continue to educate yourself.